You know, I think what the president needs to do is, frankly, put his big boy pants on. He needs to acknowledge the fact that he lost, and he needs to congratulate the winner.
Yes, thank you. Who was that?
The mayor of Philadelphia.
Well done, Mr. Mayor. Hope the rest of the Democrats hear you.
I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't
I'm
still.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in Red Bluff and Redding, California on KFOI, Round Mountains, KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania, well done, Pennsylvania, on WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio, on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, Gallup, New Mexico's KNIZ. In Concord, New Hampshire, on WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ. Up in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR. And Minneapolis, St. Paul's, AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for you on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Deprogrammed Radio, Verdant Square Radio, and Detour Talk. Blanketing Planet Earth 5 days a week, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Welcome to it. Glad to have you here for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. I may be a little bit punchy, a little bit tired today, Desi Doyen, for some odd reason.
You and me both.
And I guess I need to start here with an apology. Not to you, Desi.
Okay.
Not yet. We'll see, though. The show is young. I believe I have noted a few times on this show since Election Day, as the Trump campaign and Republicans have been claiming massive systematic fraud in the election, that there actually is no actual evidence of any sort of real confirmed broad systemic election fraud. At least not so far, but it looks like I was wrong. We now actually have the first real confirmed evidence of a broad systemic election fraud scheme in this year's election, according to the evidence published today by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. President Donald Trump's campaign helped recruit volunteers in Wisconsin this week to call supporters in Pennsylvania to urge them to mail in absentee ballots by Friday, even as the president rails against late ballots and the ongoing vote count. Only votes, in case you're unclear on this by now, only votes that were cast or postmarked by Tuesday, Election Day, November 3rd, it was, according to Pennsylvania and federal election laws, only votes that were cast and postmarked by Tuesday are legal under those laws. Trump has described any effort to vote after Tuesday as clear election fraud, and on that point, he would be correct. But that is exactly what Donald Trump's own campaign in Wisconsin apparently is doing at the direction of the Trump campaign. And the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel includes hard evidence to support it. The effort with Wisconsin volunteers appeared to try and take advantage of the delayed vote tally in Pennsylvania, where ballots mailed by Tuesday can still be counted if they arrive by Friday. But they've got to be mailed by Tuesday. Actually, they have to be postmarked by Tuesday. Chris Olmstead, the deputy director for Trump Victory in Wisconsin, on Thursday held a conference call with Trump staffers around Wisconsin. Now, in case there's any Republicans who voted for Donald Trump listening, Thursday comes after Tuesday. That's actually 2 days after Tuesday.
So this conference call, 2 days after
the
election.
Yes. They told them, Trump victory team told the volunteers to call voters in Pennsylvania whose absentee ballots had not been returned. Quote, today and for the foreseeable number of days until they decide that they are done counting, we are going to be chasing our absentee ballots over in Pennsylvania. Olmstead told the team, according to audio of the call obtained by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Good afternoon, everybody. I know you were all on the call about an hour ago when we heard from Stepien, Clark, and Miller. Certainly good to hear an update from them. Long story short is we're still in this fight, guys. The path 270 is still realistic, and we're still fighting for it. With that being said, the campaign asked us to begin making calls into Pennsylvania. As you all know, we are very much in the thick of in the midst of a fight over in Pennsylvania, and the campaign asked for our assistance. They're asking us because we are one of the very best teams in the nation. They're very impressed with what we did, turning out over 200,000 more votes than we did in 2016. And we have showed that we are the kings of making phone calls. So they are asking us to begin making phone calls today to help out with the situation over in Pennsylvania. I know we're going to dig deep. I know we're going to get this thing done because we're all on Team Trump. And, guys, all that matters is that we get to 270. So this is what we can do right now to help this campaign. So, Olmstead, I'll turn the floor over to you to go over the details. Thanks, guys.
Cool. So you guys should have all gotten an email just before the call that has the script that we will be using, as well as the link to Pennsylvania's campaign sidekick and a list of usernames and passwords that we should be using to get into their accounts. Just kind of choose anyone. You should be getting volunteers that are willing to. It's worth mentioning that we are pretty well covered for canvases as of yet. You may hear differently, and that would really just fall on staff. Our canvas is here, so there is no reason that we can't be fighting over in Pennsylvania to make that one a win as well, while we are kind of in limbo and waiting for the ballots to finish being counted. So, that's all there. Please start making calls immediately. Pennsylvania is an hour ahead of us, so we will have to stop calling at 8 p.m. But today, for the foreseeable number of days, until they decide they are done counting, we're going to be chasing our absentee ballots over in Pennsylvania. So, take a look at the script, use those usernames, get into their sidekick, get as many volunteers as you can to do the same, and let's win some Pennsylvania on top of here.
So there you go. The Trump campaign itself doing exactly what Donald Trump has been out there complaining that can't be done, that is outrageous, that we must stop the voting. He was claiming that people are voting after Election Day.
Maybe that's where he got the idea.
Of course. They accused people of doing what they themselves are doing. They referenced the phone call with Stepien, Clark, and Miller. I'm not sure who Clark is, but Stepien is Bill Stepien. That's the campaign manager for Donald Trump. I suspect Miller.
Is Stephen Miller.
No, actually, it's probably Jason Miller. Who is the campaign
advisor
and communications guy. Soon after that call, the Journal Sentinel reports at 5:19 p.m. on Thursday. That would be Thursday, November 5. That would be, again, 2 days after Election Day. A group called Kenosha for Trump blasted out an email headlined "Volunteers Urgently Needed." And they include this email in the article here. It says, Trump victory urgently needs volunteers to make phone calls to Pennsylvania Trump supporters to return their absentee ballots. These phone calls will help President Trump win the election, the email said. And again, that was an email sent out 2 days after Election Day. Volunteers were urged to contact a couple of field directors who are listed there on the email. The two are actually paid staffers for the Republican Party of Wisconsin. According to filings with the FEC, dozens of Republican staffers in Wisconsin were involved in the operation to recruit volunteers to contact Trump supporters in Pennsylvania, according to one person familiar with the effort, Journal Sentinel reports. The script Wisconsin callers were given told them to ask voters whether Pennsylvania voters had returned their absentee ballots. But the campaign also encouraged those making calls to tell voters to mail in their absentee ballots after Election Day.
Just flat out saying it.
There you go. Officials with the Republican Party of Kenosha County did not respond to calls or emails from the paper for some odd reason. Now, under a ruling by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court that has, for now anyway, been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, absentee ballots received by 5 p.m. on Friday after the election can be counted in Pennsylvania. That ruling, however, said that ballots that were received by that point without postmarks or with illegible postmarks will be considered to have been mailed in time, quote, unless a preponderance of the evidence demonstrates that it was mailed after Election Day. So they're presuming if they show up in the mail after Election Day, with a postmark, but even without one, that those could be counted. And the Secretary of State of Pennsylvania has said that those ballots will be segregated in case there's any question about them later. The U.S. Supreme Court decided to not hear that case immediately. They said, we'll consider that after the election. We'll look at that after we decide if those ballots will actually flip the election or not. Now, regarding this effort in Wisconsin, Justin Levitt, a constitutional law professor at Loyola, who also used to serve as the former deputy assistant attorney general in the Civil Rights Division at DOJ, he's also been a guest on this show over the years. He said that the email from the Kenosha group could be the basis for a criminal investigation under the section of federal civil rights law that forbids, quote, conspiracies to encourage illegal voting. Now, all of this said, while the Trump campaign has now filed an emergency petition, I think, was that today they actually filed that, Desi Doyen?
I think so.
With the U.S. Supreme, with the Republican stolen U.S. Supreme Court to toss out such ballots entirely, late ballots, even if they are postmarked properly by Election Day. It does not appear that those late arriving absentee ballots will even be needed. Joe Biden, according to the unofficial counts in Pennsylvania as of Friday morning, has now surpassed Donald Trump in the vote count in the Keystone State. And with all of the mail-in ballots that have been processed and tabulated over the past several days, we have seen that they have all trended heavily towards Joe Biden. And that is true whether these ballots have been counted coming from Democratic or Republican-leaning districts. So it has been clear for several days that Joe Biden was more than likely to win the state of Pennsylvania. And it is now clear that Joe Biden has actually won the state of Pennsylvania. It's also clear as of Friday, even if it's a bit closer in the vote count, still, that Joe Biden has won the state of Georgia as well, where the hard right Republican Secretary of State there, Brad Raffensperger, seems to have gotten a little bit ahead of himself on Friday by declaring that there would be a recount in the state. And while I'm always happy to see recounts, particularly if they are done by hand, which they likely will not be done in Georgia. They'll probably just run them through the same machines that scanned them the first time, correctly or incorrectly. It seems to me that Raffensperger may be leaning a bit too forward over his skis in making this pronouncement that there will be a recount. I tried to figure out the state law here on this. The Secretary of State may declare a recount, but only when there is evidence of some tabulation failure or fraud, and only if he is petitioned by one of the candidates to actually have that recount. At least to my knowledge, no such petition has actually been filed. That said, I believe that such a so-called recount in Georgia would actually end up helping Joe Biden for reasons that I will not bother to explain right now. I'll explain it at another time because the big news here is the news that on Friday I woke up and I expected to see splashed all over the place. But at least as we go to air today, is not being splashed anywhere as of this hour. Apparently, the news media nor the Democrats have figured it out yet. But even without Georgia or Arizona or Nevada, all states in which Joe Biden has the lead in the vote count, but where the media have not yet called the race for Joe Biden, even without those three states, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada, with Pennsylvania under his belt, that's 20 electoral votes. Joe Biden, therefore, has 273 electoral votes at this hour, at least unofficially, making him what the media would normally call, at this point, the president-elect. And yet, they aren't, at least as of right now. They haven't officially called Pennsylvania for Joe Biden. They haven't called Georgia yet for Joe Biden. Georgia is maybe arguably a little bit closer, but Pennsylvania is not. For some reason that I don't understand, the media are pulling their punches today. Even more difficult to understand is the fact that Democrats are pulling their punches for reasons that I do not understand. I understand why Fox News would want to do so, and in fact has reportedly been ordered to do so, but I don't understand what the holdup is for the rest of the media. Here's CNN's Brian Stelter explaining the memo that he is now reporting on regarding Fox News' plans to not call Joe Biden the president-elect today.
Two memos obtained by CNN from three different sources all around Fox News say that when Joe Biden reaches that point where he crosses the threshold of 270, Fox will not identify him as the president-elect. Now, Jake, other newsrooms are working through this right now, all preparing for this possibility. And president-elect is the common language that would be used in any situation like this. However, these memos at Fox News say they will stay away from that description. These memos direct Fox stars, anchors, pundits, talk show hosts to avoid language like president-elect because of the president's legal challenges. Of course, these are long-shot legal challenges. You've been talking about this on the air. But Fox is taking these challenges very seriously, showing shocking deference to the president. After 25,000 false and misleading claims from this president, Fox still assumes he's telling the truth. They're promoting voter fraud innuendo. They are denigrating cities like Philadelphia. And they're treating these long-shot lawsuits, these toothless suits, like they are serious pursuits. It is troubling because Fox's coverage influences tens of millions of people who ultimately are misled, including Jake, the most important view of all, the president of the United States.
So there you go. So I get it. I understand why Fox News is pulling their punch, because that's what they do. They're not a news organization. They are a Republican propaganda organization. But the bottom line here is, no matter what Fox News wishes to call him, by the standards that the media and both parties usually have long used, not only has Biden won the state of Pennsylvania, according to the standards they usually use, that gives him more than the 270 electoral votes that he needs to become the 46th president of the United States, and yes, therefore, the new president-elect. He does not even need to win Georgia or Arizona or Nevada, and frankly, he's likely to win all three, though is there still some question about Arizona. Maybe there'll be a recount in Georgia that'll, mark my words, end up helping Joe Biden, so we'll see there. But Pennsylvania is clear as can be. So why are Democrats not dancing in the street today? Why are they not? Why are they pulling their punches?
Well, I think it is a sign of how degraded our system has been and how much Trump has degraded it that the media, the corporate media that is not Fox News, is acting like the, you know, battered wife syndrome. They're afraid. Yeah. They're pulling their punches in advance. They're pre-flinching.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Snap out of it. Snap out of it, Democrats and media. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but you know what? Whenever I am really confused about something politically, there's often one person I tend to turn to help me out. That person, Heather Digby Parton, joins us next because Joe Biden won, people. Snap out of it. What do you need, a call from the Kenosha, Wisconsin Republican Party to let you know? I'm Brad Friedman, and yes, you are listening to the Bradcast. That's sort of how I feel today. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. On the night after Election Day this past week, Josh Marshall of Talking Points Memo wrote a short piece with the title, "Folks, let's get it the F together." Though he said something other than F there. Last night, he wrote, that would be election night, was so harrowing because the whipsaw shifts of electoral trends felt so much like the rapid and doomy collapse of Hillary Clinton's fortunes 4 years ago. It was wrenching. There's one more failsafe or firewall, and then it fades into nothing. The Senate results were super disappointing, too. Unless Dems pull off a miracle in Georgia, Joe Biden will face Mitch McConnell's running the Senate. Court reform will be off. Any significant progressive legislation is probably off the table for 2 years. That sucks, he writes. But folks, he says, Joe Biden is on the verge of winning the presidency and making Donald Trump only the fourth president to be rejected by the country in a bid for a second term in office in 108 years. Biden will have a decisive popular vote win and his party will maintain control of the House of Representatives. This is a big effing deal. Although, again, he didn't say effing. And ending Trump's presidency is an incredibly important accomplishment for the future of this country. That, he says, is something to savor. It wasn't easy. You may think it should have been. I do, too. But it wasn't. It was really hard. And the Democrats have done it. Yet I look around and I see Democrats crestfallen, racked with self-doubt, falling into their established internecine exchanges of blame and recrimination. He says it's like a festival pity party of self-womping. Biden and his supporters had one job, get to 270. And they did. Are there challenges, he writes? Absolutely. But saving your country isn't easy. We knew that. It's going to be incredibly hard. There are all sorts of things that happened last night and that have happened over the last 4 years that I don't understand. Josh Marshall writes, the persistence of Trumpism, its resilience. Is it racism? Yes. Sexism? Yes. Authoritarianism? Yes. But they're all incomplete. We're in the middle of a big politico-cultural transformation that we need to get our arms fully around, but haven't yet. He concludes, I really don't know what the 2 years holds, but I'm certain of one thing. It is and will be immeasurably better than Donald Trump having been reelected to a second term in office. No question. You did that. You owe it to yourselves to get pumped and rejoice in that. It's something to savor. It will help sustain you through endless civic work to come. Well, thank you, Josh Marshall, and I believe he is right. This sort of pity party among Democrats and all anti-Trump Americans kind of needs to end, in my opinion. Wake the F up, please, as he might say. There is work to be done here if this sinking ship of state is actually to somehow be righted in the days and weeks and months and years ahead. And while I sort of understand the fog of the past several days of uncertainty as votes were and still are being tallied up, it's kind of a lot harder to make sense of it today after Joe Biden has clearly reached the 270 electoral vote mark. As she did on June 16, 2015, the day that Donald Trump came down the escalator at Trump Tower to decry Mexicans as rapists and declare his candidacy for president, when almost the entire rest of the media was regarding the entire thing as a joke, suggesting he could never actually become president of the United States, and she and I on this program were decidedly arguing that he absolutely could. Well, we are joined today once again by our longtime friend and colleague, Heather Digby Parton, to make sense of whatever seems to be going on today, and as importantly, to look forward to what needs to happen tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow after Trump finally realizes that, yes, he has lost, and Democrats realize that, yes, they have won, which is shockingly slow in coming as we go to air today on Friday. After the numbers show very clearly, short of several amazing computer miscalculations in several different states that would have to happen, that Biden has in fact won the presidency and will become the 46th president of the United States. Heather Digby Parton, of course, is known to many as simply Digby and is the mistress of her own domain, if you will, at least at Digby's Hullabaloo blog, as well as a regular columnist at Salon.com and a winner of the coveted Sidney Hillman Prize for Opinion and Analysis Journalism. Good day, Heather, and boy howdy am I glad that you're here today on yet another day when I may need your help in making sense of things.
Well, I think we're on the same page, Brad.
Are we?
You know, absolutely. I read that same piece by Josh Marshall, and I've been feeling the same way. It's driving me a little bit crazy, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's one thing to be despondent the way we were in 2016. No one could, you know, will beat me for the nightmares and the, you know, the total depression that I fell into after that result. And that was completely understandable. And it was understandable, and I wrote about this week in Salon, which was the day after the election. I guess it was on Wednesday, which was, you know, the reason that we are in, you know, we've been traumatized by the Trump years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really think it's been a national trauma, probably worse for liberals and Democrats than you know, for the other side. They seem to have been having a lot of fun. But for us, it's been really awful. And so one of the things I think that makes it so traumatizing is that we just can't wrap our minds around the idea that this many people would vote for a monster like Donald Trump, who would actually admire and respect him and want him to be president for four more years. We couldn't believe it, but in the last time, in 2016, you know, the polls were close. We should have been aware that it was possible. You and I were certainly aware of it. I wrote about it just in the days before the election. Hey, you know, look, these polls are not looking that great. I mean, let's be careful here. But in my heart, emotionally, I just couldn't believe that so many of my fellow Americans would do that. And, sorry, go ahead.
No, and I do. I understand that. I understand that amongst the electorate. I understand that amongst, you know, the folks. Desi, I was giving Desi Doyen hell yesterday about her PTSD. trying to say, look at the numbers. This is math. This is science. Joe Biden has got this. And, you know, she was still and has been, like I think a lot of people, still saying, Trump could do this or Trump could do that.
Or the Supreme Court could do stuff.
Or the Supreme Court. Exactly. And then I guess I understand that. But, you know, the question that I sort of have today as we go to air, again, I said it's a Friday afternoon. Overnight counting in both Pennsylvania and Georgia, but particularly in Pennsylvania, shows clearly that Joe Biden will win the Electoral College votes that he needs to become the next president. Why aren't the networks, the media, why aren't they declaring as much right now? And perhaps more importantly, why haven't the Democrats themselves and Joe Biden done so yet at this point? I expected to wake up, you know, we're out here on the West Coast, we're 3 hours behind everything. I expected to wake up and find that I missed the moment when, you know, Brian Williams goes on MSNBC and, you know, announces that Joe Biden will be the 46th president of the United States. None of that has happened yet. What's going on here, Heather?
Well, I wish I knew. I did read one sort of intriguing thing. I think I found on Twitter somebody said that maybe it's possible that the networks want Fox to call this first. And that could be for any number of reasons. One, I think this person thought it was because they wanted to give them legitimacy so that they could bring them back into the fold after this Trump thing. Other people said no. It would be because they want to be able to point the finger at Fox when the right wing goes crazy over it. Either way, it doesn't make any sense.
That's not how you run. You're a media outlet. That's not how you run.
Exactly. I mean, and I don't know. I mean, maybe they have some of this same thing. I'm not trying to excuse them because I think it's as daft as you do. But it's like, you know, Desi says, you know, but what about the Supreme Court? And there's all these court cases and things happen. And, you know, we think about 2000 and we think about, you know, Donald Trump winning in the first place and how crazy he's been. And every time we think he can't get any crazier, he does. So
exactly.
There's this feeling of just kind of, you know, oh my, who wants to be the first one to go out there and say that it's over when it's not over?
I'll say it. It's over.
It's over.
I'll say it. And by the way, I have a split brain on this because I'm still in the fight for election integrity, and I will go to bat, you know, to make sure that every vote is counted in a way that every voter, even Trump voters, perhaps especially Trump voters, can know that it has been counted accurately. So, you know, as an election integrity person, I never announce the president-elect. Oh, he's won this or that. I always couch it by saying the media is claiming this.
Right.
Or the candidate is, claiming victory. But that's me as an election integrity person. As on the political side and on the media side, they do this all the time. They always call races long before the ballots are all counted. Candidates, you know, declare victory long before the ballots are actually counted. As a matter of fact, let me play this. Republicans absolutely did not win, no matter how you slice it at this point, but they are saying that they did. Here's how the man who would be the Speaker of the House, this is Kevin McCarthy, he'd be the Speaker of the House if Republicans ever win back a House majority. He was talking about it like this on Fox News on Thursday night.
President Trump won this election, so everyone who's listening, do not be quiet. Do not be silent about this. We cannot allow this to happen before our very eyes. We unite together. Now, you don't need to be a Republican. You believe in every legal vote needs to count. You believe in the American process. Join together and let's stop this.
So
unbelievable.
They didn't even win by any stretch of the imagination, and they are proclaiming that they did. I mean, where are the Democrats?
I don't know. I wish I could tell you. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe they're afraid of getting out there and say, we win. No, we won. You know, I mean, I don't even know. Can we just stop for a second and just think about what you just played? I mean, we have the president, who we know is a complete nutcase, right? Mm-hmm. He came out in the middle of the night on the day after, you know, the morning after the election was over and declared victory. And it was a grotesque display. I mean, everything about it, from the fact it was in the White House to the fact that he was, you know, the votes had barely even, they had barely even begun. In fact, in some states, they had not started to count some of the votes, and he declares victory. Okay, that's Donald Trump, and, you know, yes, he's the president, but we know he's nuts. What is happening with these Republicans like Kevin McCarthy? I mean, Kevin McCarthy isn't the sharpest tool in the shed, but, I mean, can he be that craven? They come out on Thursday and say, after all these votes have been counted and they're still counting, and say that Donald Trump won the election when it's patently obvious that he did not, and they're going to go around lying. I mean, Brad, this is why people are like this. This is why people like Desi and me, to some extent, are sitting there going, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, when he's gone, when he's in the helicopter and they're flying him off, that's when I believe this guy is going to leave, because they do stuff like this. That is completely outrageous for the majority leader of the House of Representatives to come out and say something like that.
Of course.
After Lindsey Graham, he was on Fox News last night talking. I mean, this guy's he's a powerful senator. He just won re-election.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to lick Trump's boots anymore. That is no longer necessary. Mm-hmm. He used to be a maverick. You know, he used to be a guy who felt, confident that he could go out and be his own man.
Yeah.
He comes out and basically suggests that they could, completely void the election in the Pennsylvania legislature and just give the electors to Trump.
Let me play that clip, because I don't think if you don't hear it, people won't, you know, believe it. And it is far worse even than what Kevin McCarthy did, because he is literally talking about stealing the election by just choosing a different slate of electors than the people actually chose. Here's Hannity and Lindsey Graham, and if it comes from Hannity, you know that's an official call, essentially coming straight from the White House. Here's a bit of that.
You're a lawyer also, Senator. We're hearing report after report. Election law is clear. It is clear that partisan observers can be there for the vote count. They're being denied access.
Yeah, right.
Now, if that part of the election law is violated. Now, we also know that the Constitution allows state legislators to serve, you know, they're the ones that would make decisions. Should these Republican lawmakers in Pennsylvania and elsewhere, if there's corruption in the law, they don't abide by the law and they don't allow observers in as the law calls for, should they then invalidate this?
I think everything should be on the table. So there's the process of observing an election that's being violated. Philadelphia elections are crooked as a snake. Why are they shutting people out? Because they don't want people to see what they're doing.
Okay, they are not shutting people out.
That's all a lie.
That's a lie. They are not holding out, denying access to observers. That is all a lie and nonsense. And I'm sorry I didn't say that before we played that clip, but that's all a lie. But there he is saying, everything should be on the table, including electing, choosing a new slate of electors by the state legislature.
It's unbelievable to me. And I mean, and that is where the PTSD, kind of kicks in, and you go, maybe the world has really, turned upside down to such an extent that they could get away with this. Now, on my logical side, I do not believe that's the case. I mean, even, of course, I didn't believe the Supreme Court would take the case in Bush versus Gore either, but this is a different situation. You had one state with a separation of votes of 537 votes, and, this is going to be, if they try to contest this, across a number of states. Donald Trump can't win unless he wins all of the states that have not been formally declared.
Mm-hmm.
Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, and in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. He has to win them all. And all of them, with the exception of North Carolina, Biden is winning.
Mm-hmm.
So, the task at hand there would be to come up with some kind of grand conspiracy that worked across all those states, disparate as they are. There's two in the West, there's one in the South, there's one in the Northeast, and that they were all somehow doing the same thing and take it to the Supreme Court and have them invalidate the election. I mean, that is, if that were to happen, I think we have bigger problems.
We are in deep, 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 deep.
So, it's not rational to think they can get away with this.
Mm-hmm.
But it is rational, and I think part of my fear on this is not, and one of the reasons why I sort of agree with Josh Marshall and with you, Brad, in the sense that we should be confident here. And I think, to be fair, I think Biden has come out a number of times, and I think he has sort of exuded this kind of calm, hey, we've got this, everybody just cool your jets sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the reasons for us to do that and to just sort of say, look, we won, and that's the end of that, you guys want to go recount, you want to play your little games, you want to do all this, if you go right ahead, it's not going to change anything, we won. And the reason to do that is because what's happening on the other side is total lunacy. And those people are being egged on by, the President of the United States, his spawn.
Yeah.
And, the people, even people like Kevin McCarthy. And they're being ginned up. I mean, there's a fringe group there that's genuinely scary as far as potential violence is concerned.
Well,
we've already seen some.
But they're not being answered to, in my opinion. Yes, Republicans are terrible. They're, in fact, many of them, as you note, quite evil. There was a couple of people who were obtained heading towards the counting center in Philadelphia, I think, on Friday afternoon with guns or something. Yes, they're dangerous people. They're bad people. But you don't roll over and be frightened right. of dangerous and bad people. You respond to them, you answer to them. Now, in fairness, as we go to air, Heather Digby Parton, it is, as I said, Friday afternoon. Joe Biden is set to speak this evening, I think. I don't know what he's going to say. I'm hoping he's going to declare victory, even if I might give him hell for declaring victory before all the votes are counted. But on a political level, that's what he ought to be doing.
Yeah.
And I want to move forward in a second. We'll take a quick break and we'll talk about we'll sort of move beyond this page to what a Joe Biden presidency might look like. But do you have, like I said, I've been giving Desi trouble about her PTSD, but in reality, do you have any idea, any concerns as far as what Trump actually could do to undermine the results of the election itself at this point? Or is this all just a lot of noise until we move on to the Joe Biden becomes president phase?
Yeah, I don't know what Donald Trump is going to do, but I do know that, when they apparently, I just read this, Jared Kushner and I guess it was Mark Meadows had been out there searching for their James Baker, the great elder that came in the Florida 2000 recount.
Yeah.
And being the sort of voice of, the stentorian voice of the Republican Party to lead the effort. And they came up with David Bossie is who they've got. So I'm not... Yeah. super concerned about their ability to do that. Now, I'm
what,
hopeful
Chris,
that...
Chris Kobach wasn't available?
I know. I mean, okay. I think Louis Gohmert, he hasn't been doing much. I mean, bring him on out. I mean, they did have Rudy Giuliani out there making a complete fool of himself. Yeah. So what that tells me is, and I've actually checked around, because they do have very, very ruthless and competent election lawyers in the Republican Party, and I've been checking to see, did they deploy them? Because I thought they had. To all these swing states to be ready to do these things. I mean, we've been talking about this for months, that they were going to contest the election wherever it was closed, right? I mean, this isn't news to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they'd sent out all these lawyers. Well, as it turns out, they do have some, rather well-respected lawyers in Philadelphia from Jones Day, the big law firm.
Well, they have Thor Hearn.
And they have Thor Hearn up in Michigan, who is, but he is an election lawyer. I mean, he's a complete idiot. I mean, and you know all these guys,
yes,
too.
Yes, of course.
But so they don't really have the A-team, even on the legal side, much less on the PR side.
No.
So, I mean, this is just sort of, it's just like a temper tantrum. And it's all over the place. And in fact, there's all these reports coming out of the White House and the campaign saying, we don't have any talking points. We don't know what we're supposed to say. We're just kind of going, we're seeing what's happening on Fox News and then, going out and spouting it. I'm not all that worried.
You shouldn't be. They're real Republican attorneys. Guys like Ben Ginsburg want nothing to do with this crap.
Yeah.
Let me take a quick break, and we will come back with what I had hoped and thought we might be talking about today, when I had planned to sort of wake up and see that Biden had been declared the president-elect and all of that stuff. What we can actually learn from this election and what we need to look forward to as we move forward into a Biden presidency. I'm speaking with the great, the delightful, the awesome Heather Digby Parton. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. Don't touch that dial. Get on the ball, people. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, speaking with the delightful Heather Digby Parton. All right, Heather, I am declaring Joe Biden the next president of the United States. Since the media and the Democrats themselves don't seem prepared to do that, I'm going to do it here and now, looking at the numbers, looking at the math, here at the Bradcast decision desk, it's going to be Joe Biden. So it's still very early, and there's a lot of guesswork right now based on exit polling and still counting ballots and so forth. So we have to see what happens in the two likely U.S. Senate runoff elections that are likely coming in January in Georgia, and there's still an uncalled U.S. Senate race in North Carolina, but though it doesn't look good, and in Alaska, of all places. But what is your takeaway, Heather, from what appears to have happened on November 4th? What is the lesson we should take away from that?
I think a lot of, for one thing, just looking back historically, and since the parties have, you know, sort of realigned so that they are much more ideologically, distinct, mm-hmm. That, you know, the Senate is always going to be very, very tough for Democrats just because of the structural, you know, inequity in it, in that it is overrepresented by rural conservative states. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to sort of remind people, too, that even if we had won say we win Alaska and North Carolina, you know, those are not, you know, they're not Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez politicians that are going to be coming out of those states.
Right.
So, you know, you look back at something like Obamacare. They had a 60-vote majority. Do you remember how hard it was to get that through?
Filibuster-proof majority, yeah.
The Cornhusker, compromise, Lieberman, right. You had all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying, for Democrats to get a majority, it means they have to have a bunch of people on the conservative side, who, by the way, always are a pain in the neck because they are very powerful, right? They're the fulcrum there, on everything depends upon them.
Right.
And they end up having veto power over a lot of things. And I watched that my whole life. I mean, this is something that I remember going all the way back. I mean, you go back to the 90s and some guy, this guy, David Boren from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I mean, he stood there and just pranced around. What a diva, I'm not quite sure. I don't know what I'm going to do. So I'm just pointing this out just to say that even if Democrats have a majority, it's never going to be easy to do sweeping change. Obamacare was kind of a miracle, and they had to pass that through reconciliation,
yeah.
Even though they had at the time 59 votes. And we were thinking we're going to get rid of the filibuster, we're going to expand the court and all that stuff, and maybe with a huge majority they would have been able to do it. But that was never in the cards. So I'm not saying that it's hopeless or anything like that. I'm just saying that people need to be realistic about the U.S. Senate, and I'm for abolishing it myself. I see absolutely no purpose in it.
Senate entirely.
Absolutely.
Oh my!
Just get rid of it.
It
is undemocratic. I see no reason why representation in the Senate should be the same for Alaska as it is for California.
You,
that makes no sense to me. Democracy is about people, not about landmass.
Yes, you are a woman of the people, clearly. Heather, I don't personally buy the idea that we're hearing from some progressives out there that, Bernie Sanders or even Elizabeth Warren would have won in a landslide.
No, that's
yeah, but we are already hearing that from some corners. I don't buy it. I think that folks, it could be true, but I think that folks are just sort of guessing. But there were a lot of progressive initiatives at the same time that were adopted in unexpected places around the country. $15 minimum wage in Florida, recreational marijuana in about 5 states. One of them, I think, was Montana. But so do you buy the notion that Dems were just all wrong to run as they did in this election, even though it should be noted that it was the voters who chose Joe Biden? It was not the party.
Yeah. And this is an art. That's another thing we've been talking about my whole life is this, so-and-so would have won. And, if only they'd have been more progressive, we wouldn't have such a conservative country, has always been the argument. I do think that, those issues are almost always more popular. I mean, it's very unusual that you're going to find that, hardcore conservative issues are really more popular among a majority. The problem is that I think we all know this, and Donald Trump has proved it better than anybody, that a whole lot of politics isn't about issues. And a lot of it is just about, tribal identity, charismatic leaders. I mean, there's a whole, and I'm not saying issues are irrelevant. Of course not. They're extremely important. They're the important thing. But that isn't how politics is, especially in our current sort of, infotainment environment, and with the bifurcated, media universes, where, you know, you're dealing with like two different worlds, essentially. So, you know, I am not surprised. What I think happened, though, with Donald Trump, and, you know, 2018 was, you know, although we started off with PTSD on that one, it took us a few days before we realized we'd actually won on that, too. But a lot of that was a lot of the people who came out and voted for Democrats in these districts that Democrats lost this time out, they were voting against Donald Trump. They weren't voting on issues. They were voting. They were sending a message about Donald Trump. They wanted him to be. They wanted a stop on him, and so they voted for Democrats. This time, they got to vote against Donald Trump, and they're still Republicans. They're people who, you know, they looked at the Republican in the House, that running for the House seat, and they went, "Well, we'll get rid of Donald Trump, and then, you know, I'm still this guy. I like him better than that Democrat." I don't think it's really that hard to figure out, because the truth is that it hadn't. You know, when you have these two worlds that people are living in which Donald Trump is kind of the, you know, he sucks up every bit of oxygen in both of them, and we come at them from two different directions, there wasn't a substantial change in the way people really think about the world. You know what I mean? It's like that we've been in this four-year kind of weird, surreal, you know, atmosphere that didn't really have anything to do with politics. I mean, I kind of feel like you asked me about what I think is going to happen with Joe Biden, and I think that part is going to be a reset. We're going to go back to politics in a more familiar way, where we're talking about issues. They're going to start talking about the debt. We're going to talk about health care. It's going to be something a little bit more familiar that way without him, although he's going to try and remain at the center of attention.
Of course he is.
And he may for a while, because... You know, he's him.
Well, of course, and the media still are going to love him, at least for a while. And then hopefully, maybe, it may take a couple of years, but hopefully he'll, you know, join Sarah Palin in whatever shack she is living in somewhere in Alaska, so we never have
to
hear from him again.
Together.
Yeah. Very quickly, because we got to get out, but... presuming that Democrats are unable to take over the U.S. Senate, how can Joe Biden actually govern with Mitch McConnell obstructing in the Senate and a now very unfriendly U.S. Supreme Court? What should be his tactic in dealing with that? Should he run against McConnell and the Republicans, sort of the way FDR did, you know, with an eye towards 2024? Or should he try to work with them, as he suggested that he would magically be able to do during the campaign?
Well, you know, I think you know what I think about that. You can't work with him. Mitch McConnell is the Grim Reaper, self-described Grim Reaper.
Yep.
He has no intention of being cooperative. That's is not what he does, and he hasn't even been being quiet about it. He actually gave an interview in which he said that they were, you know, that he's planning to choose Joe Biden's cabinet for him. He is not going to allow Joe Biden to have any cabinet members that he doesn't personally think approve of. So, you know, look, that's ridiculous. It's not going to happen. What Joe Biden does have is he has the executive branch of the government, which Donald Trump has shown has a whole lot of power that we never realized quite how much they have.
Apparently.
If they are willing to wield it. And I don't think he's going to have any choice. We have crises facing us that are so huge that he has no choice. He has to do whatever. I mean, this is the FDR model here, where you've got, you know, we've got this pandemic, we've got this economic crisis, which is, you know, and we're about to hit, you know, I don't even know how bad it's going to be on both counts, but it's going to be awful.
Yep.
And you know, we're dealing with climate change. Time is ticking on that. Yep. And I think even Joe Biden gets that. He's an old guy, but he keeps talking about it in ways that make me think somebody has, you know, whispered in his ear, "Hey, Joe, this is it. You know, this is the big one. You got to do it." So, you know, he has tremendous power as the, you know, as the running the executive branch and as the president, and he has the Department of Justice. And, you know, I know that he's not going to be in there interfering as president, but I think he can appoint some people. And, you know, Mitch McConnell, you know, doesn't know everything, right? I mean, I don't think he knows exactly everybody who is in the Department of Justice, or that, you know, he can control that entirely. So I'm hoping that what they have recognized is that they have to wield that power that they have ruthlessly and not... you know, not worry about all this, you know, well, gosh, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, and we really don't want to go there, and we want to reestablish all the norms and all that. No, we can't reestablish norms right now, because the Republican Party is the same Republican Party that, you know, enabled and collaborated with Donald Trump this whole time. And they are not changing, as we are seeing. They're not changing, and, you know, they're going to have to do this, or else, you know, 2022 will be a bloodbath.
Yep.
If they don't.
Wield that power and dare those Republicans to start bitching and complaining about it.
They will, but just after, go la la la
well,
la, la, la.
Well,
la,
after they all stood by and watched Donald Trump do the exact same thing without making a peep. So if that's the kind of power that the presidency should have, then Joe Biden better damn well use it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got to get out. And by the way, initially, my hope was that we could talk today about what we should learn from the now-ended Trump era and what to expect, you know, will happen with Trumpism as we move forward. But you know what? Apparently, we're not even to that point yet. So we will hold that conversation for the hopefully not too distant future. Heather Digby Parton can be found, of course, at salon.com and at her own blog Hullabaloo, which is digbysblog.net, and of course on the Twitters at digby56. Always great speaking with you, Heather. We will do it again soon, I promise, whether you like it or not.
Thanks for having me, Brad. It was great.
You bet. Thank you. Okay, we got to get out of here.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy, what a week. Thank you to my producer, Desi Doyen. And to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night or afternoon or your week or month or year with us. It is greatly appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. That is made possible, as are Desi and me here on the public airwaves, by those of you who stop by bradblog.com/donate. We are 100% listener supported. That's why I can be the snarky jerk that I am. Don't have to worry about anything. Thanks to those of you who stop by bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. You can drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. I hope to see you there until I see you here next time. And the next time I see you here, please, everyone, people, Joe Biden is the president-elect. He is the next president of the United States, and I hope you people start acting like it. Enjoy yourself. You won that one, at least. All right, that's it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.